chromosomes. Little strands of nucleic acids and proteins are the fundamental genetic instructions that tell us who we are at birth. Most people are born with 46 chromosomes, but each year in the United States, about 6,000 people are born with an extra chromosome, making them a person with Down syndrome. If you've ever encountered someone with Down syndrome, you know that they are some of the kindest, most joyful people you will ever meet. They truly have something extra. My name is Lisa Nichols, and I have spent the last 24 years as both the CEO of Technology Partners and as the mother to Allie. Allie has something extra in every sense of the word. I have been blessed to be by her side as she impacts everyone she meets. Through these two important roles as CEO and mother to Allie, I have witnessed countless life lessons that have fundamentally changed the way I look at the world. While you may not have an extra chromosome, every leader has something extra that defines who you are. Join me as I explore the something extra in leaders from all walks of life and discover how that difference in each of them has made a difference in their companies, their families, their communities, and in themselves. I am thrilled to have Dr. Dedrick Carter on the show today. Dr. Carter is the Vice Chancellor for Operations and Technology Transfer and a Professor of Engineering Practice at Washington University. If you like this episode today, please go to Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen and leave us a 5-star rating. Well, Dedrick, welcome to the Something Extra podcast.
Hello. How are you?
I cannot wait for our conversation. I've really been looking forward to this. You and I met, I believe, for the first time when we were on the Governor's Innovation Task Force.
That's right.
And Dedrick, I can just tell you, when I think about you, there's a lot of words that come to mind. Incredibly intelligent. Anyone that knows you, you're incredibly intelligent. But I could tell at just that first time that I met you, you have a very much of a philosophical mind. And then, of course, I learned later that you have a PhD in philosophy. So I know you're not from St. Louis. You're a St. Louis transplant. I think you transplanted here in 2013 from South Carolina by way of MIT. You're an engineer, an entrepreneur, an academic, a father, the husband to Ebony. And then you got a very busy household because you got three little girls, 2, 5, and 7, that I know keeps you on your toes.
Yes.
A reformed skydiver.
Yes.
That's something I did not know about you. A son of a civil rights activist. There's so much to Dr. Dedrick Carter, and I hope that we can just scratch the surface today. But tell me a little bit about how you grew up.
Yeah. So I grew up in a small town in the South, where everyone sort of knew everybody, and generations and ties last a lifetime, including friendships. And as a result of that, I've incorporated a lot of that sort of small town South Carolina world into me. Whenever we cook dinner, I always make a little extra in case somebody stops by. I think about the advice my grandmother gave me, save some for a rainy day. Sometimes it drizzles, sometimes it pours, but it always rains. And those sorts of things really are the fundamental foundations of who I am as a person. I'm kind of folksy. I like people. I like interactions. The last year has been tough because it's sort of trying to figure out how you take a folksy small town Southern boy and put them in an environment of squares. What I realize is that our connections are much stronger than just, you know, being in person. They're figuring out how you make some tie in some substantial way, whether you're near or far. That muscle is really something we've all had to develop in the last year.
No doubt about it. But I love you talking about your Southern roots. Do you have siblings, Dedrick?
I do. So I'm the third of four. I have an older sister and brother and a younger sister. Interestingly enough, my older brother and his family just kind of showed up yesterday. I say kind of showed up, but my nephew is starting law school at WashU. And so I'm thrilled that I'm going to have some more of my family coming closer in. So bigger dinners these days.
Yes. You're going to make a little bit more for that rainy day, right? So yeah, we'll talk about that. See, I didn't know you were a chef too. I mean, my goodness, we're the resume is just getting bigger and bigger as time goes on here. Did you have an interest in technology? Because I want to talk about, you've got a very super impressive pedigree. That's the only way to put it to me, you know, because you went to MIT, you have multiple degrees from there. Did you have an interest in technology when you were young, Dedrick? And where did that come from?
So I was always curious. I was a kid who was running through the woods trying to figure out how the stream worked and why this was falling this way and that way. I see that in my middle daughter as well, which is sort of great to nurture. And that curiosity always wanted me to sort of break things and fix them and put them together to understand. And I think that naturally lends itself to kind of an engineering problem solving systems way of thinking about the world. It was interesting in my small town because not everyone sort of thought that way. And it really was me in high school. I went to a program at MIT one summer called the MITES program and the Minority Introduction to Engineering and Sciences. And at that program, I saw people who looked like me, who were thinking like me, who I didn't have to sort of suppress some of the questions and curiosity I had, but I could just, you know, I remember a conversation where someone said, well, I'll take your question and I'll up you this question. And we were up till 2-3 in the morning just talking about stuff. I called my dad, my mom and my dad, and I said, Mom, Dad, I got to go here. My dad, I'll never forget it. He said, son, one, find the money. And two, if you ever call me again at 2 a.m, someone better be dead or dying. Talk to your mom. The next morning, I got up and I went and I ended up finding a full ride to MIT. So it was great.
My goodness. That what a great story. But, you know, I love what you said, though. You got there and you found all these like-minded people. And I bet you were just in heaven. You know, because you're like, there's no question I can throw out that somebody's going to be like, oh, that's a weird question. I mean, you know, there's going to be a lot of discourse there, which I'm sure just really filled up your tank.
It's amazing when you have people that can take you to task and sort of, you know, make you think on a higher level, make you perform at a higher level than you have been performing. Because sometimes I joke with people, if it feels like you're doing it in your sleep, you probably are, and you probably need the next level of challenge. And so getting together with a set of people who were unabashedly curious and willing to argue with me and admit we were wrong or right, or, you know, this was just the first skirmish in the battle for greater knowledge, was really so fulfilling for me. So I'm a religious and spiritual person as well. And I realize that at the core of my spirituality is sort of this insatiable quest for knowledge and trying to understand and deepen relationship. I think those two things live very close together in me and how.
Right. Oh, but you know, you got a BS in electrical engineering, a computer science from MIT, you've got a master's, then you went off and got your doctorate in philosophy, and then you went back and got your MBA. Then you started, and I want to quickly get into what you're doing today because there's a lot to talk about, but I know that you were in management consulting for a while. So you were at AMS, right?
Right out of school, I wanted to see lots of big problems, big hairy problems. And I was actually pretty good at thinking from a systems level how pieces came together and how something small in this area impacted something big in another. And so consulting was one of those areas that growing up, I knew very little. I didn't know anything about it. I really didn't know anything about it until I got to college and saw that it was an option. And so I went in and had a chance to apply my engineering thinking in technical problems and business problems, both here and abroad. And it really was eye-opening for me, expanding my horizons in ways that said the world is much, much bigger than I ever really imagined. And so now I want to kind of go after it. Right? That sort of insatiable knowledge kind of grew out of, wow, looking at the world from the problems that are presented from a consulting perspective.
Yeah, that is such a good preparation ground. And then I know that AMS got bought by CGI, and then I think you did a stint with Deloitte, but I could not agree with you more. And just seeing a variety of industries, a variety of different organizations, and now how they're handling those things, my goodness, you were able to put a lot into your tool belt. But what is really kind of funny to me too, I'm like, what is in the water at MIT? Because I've known so many people, Dr. Carter, that have gone to MIT and then they go back as a professor or they go back to that school to teach. And so I know you did that for quite a while.
Yeah, it's a special place. I mean, I don't know that there's any place like it on the planet, to be honest with you. It's a place where I don't care how much money you have. I don't care who you're connected to. It is, can you effectively solve problems? It really is an egalitarian meritocracy that sort of levels all things. And it's about in honoring the problem framing and problem solving process. When your sort of mind is wired in the way that I just talked about, then it becomes the mecca. You sort of want to go back. And I used to just sometimes go back there once a year to breathe the air and walk the halls and sort of work through some of the problems that were in my head. Beyond that, it brings together, again, like-minded people. It is a convener that brings together people from all over who are willing to shed all of the superfluities that we have in life and sort of really honor the problem. I trained to be a bartender in the UK when I finished my time with my company there. Something I wanted to do. And one of the things you learn about a beverage, you know, an alcoholic beverage, is that the water is important. Whether it's a whiskey or beer, the water is really important. And so when you find a place that's got special water, like the MIT water I talked about, mm-hmm. you know, we talked about AMS. And AMS was a place that really had a very strong culture. Even now, 50 years, I mean, the company's been acquired 15 years ago, but we had an event 2 years ago where, you know, a ballroom in DC was full of people celebrating the 50th anniversary of the founding of that company. So those sorts of elements of streams of water really are attractive to me. I actually think I found a version of that at Washington University as well. So
I definitely think you have too. And that brings me, you came to WashU, St. Louis. A lot of people know you, Dr. Carter, because you're so instrumental in the entrepreneurial ecosystem here. But for those who do not, we are so blessed to have you. You've just jumped in with both feet into St. Louis. So why though, you're at MIT, 2013, you come to WashU. Why St. Louis? What's special about St. Louis, Dr. Carter?
When I was at the National Science Foundation, we launched the Innovation Corps, the I-Corps program that became a national model. It was adopted in Ireland and other agencies have adopted it. We have something in the area. When I pulled together one of the first advisory committees for that, we looked at the output of the I-Corps and we saw that if you look at the coast, there was great things happening in terms of companies and funding and NSF grants and the like. But we had a sort of a bare spot in the middle of the country. And Desh Deshpande of the Deshpande Foundation said to me, what are we going to do about the center of the country? And I said, I don't know. I mean, I remember standing in my office looking and thinking, what are the things we could do? And one of the things I realized is that I thought there was a huge opportunity in St. Louis to do more. The cost of living is low. The quality of life is high. There's fantastic research and teaching and people. People are just good and kind and great here. Of course, there are warts in every place that you can find yourself, but there was a kernel here that you could really do something with if the right lightning bolt sort of came in here. And I thought I was not necessarily the lightning bolt, but maybe I could sort of attract some energy and some electrons together to make it happen. And it became even more of a passion for me when I realized sort of starting new ventures and encouraging those in the space and sort of raising the profile of innovation entrepreneurship in St. Louis when my daughters were born, because I have three native-born St. Louisans who will have Missouri on their birth certificate. And as a result of that, it really is important to me to make sure that they're proud Show Me State residents as they grow up.
Yeah, and I completely agree with you. You can't stand on the sidelines and just hope that things will, you know, you have to have a bias toward action. You and I have talked about that. But yeah, I mean, St. Louis, Forbes recently cited us as the fastest growing city for startups. The analytical website 538 listed us as the second fastest growing startup community this past fall. The region's home to over 700 bioscience companies. There are awesome things going on here. This is a special place and we need to start owning that.
That's right.
You know,
right.
And being proud of that.
You said something, Lisa, that I love. You sort of said you can't sort of sit on the side of the road. And it reminds me, there's a poem that my dad used to say all the time. It's a Sam Walter Foss poem. House by the side of the road. Let me live in my house by the side of the road where the races of men go by, men that are good, men that are bad, as good or as bad as I. I would not sit in the scorner seat nor hurl the cynic's ban, but let me live in my house by the side of the road and be a friend to man. And he would turn to me and say, you can't do that. You can't just live in the house by the side of the road. You got to go out to the highways and byways. You got to actually go out and do something. And as a result of that action, whether it's right or wrong, you got to think, but you got to do. Your comment triggers that for me, that I believe that there's more for us to kind of come together and do together to raise the profile and the impact of the state.
Absolutely. Well, we're going to talk about that and we're going to dig into that, but we do need to take a quick break and then we'll be right back with Dr. Dedrick Carter.
We at Technology Partners understand the difficulty to find work that is engaging, yields high pay, and facilitates a work-life balance. Over the past 25 years, we have enhanced the IT teams of over 244 client companies and placed more than 3,000 IT professionals with them on short-term or permanent basis. Our staff includes over 300 experienced IT professionals. So if you're looking to take the next step in your career, visit jobs.technologypartners.net, apply for a job, and one of our expert recruiters will be happy to connect with you.
So welcome back, Dedrick. We've got a lot here to put into this last half of the episode, but you've got this concept that you call the F lab. Yeah. Now, what is the F lab? Because we can conjure up all kinds of things in our minds, right?
Well, you know, the F is that great word that's it's sort of that placeholder, kind of like star dot star that could be anything. And for this one, it's failure lab, because we actually have so many people in our lives that are so focused on doing and the being at the top level and the high that failure is one of those things we don't ever want to talk about. And so people want to go into a class and start at an A and maybe work their way down or hold it. And I said, you know, what if we went the other direction? What if everybody started at an F and you worked your way up? You can end up in the same place, but if you start at the beginning, and I could either say you started 100 and you go down, or you start at 0 and you go up, you can end up in the same place. It's just a different way to think about it. When my wife and I were planning our wedding, we had this big affair and we sort of said, well, you know, what if we had all these people and then you start thinking about how you cut it down? And we said, no, let's think about it differently. That we got from a friend. What if you started from a core and you built out? And so failure lab is, how do you engage with and renew yourself from a review of your failures, not wallowing in them or being stuck by them, but being empowered by the lessons that they learn and incorporating those lessons into you. And the lab part is that, you know, labs are dirty, messy. You got to get in there and actually do the work.
Yeah.
And so if you think about dissecting your failures and using those failures to make you stronger, that's what F-Lab is all about.
You know, most oftentimes, Dr. Carter, why is it that somebody does not go and try something new?
Yeah, it's fear of failing. I'm not going to be great. And I actually tell people, so if you only do the things you're really good at, or the things that you know you're going to excel at, you're limiting yourself. I love to put myself in situations to look silly, to be off balance, because A, it's fun, right? It helps me to keep the endorphins in the mode of being happy, smiley. And B, I'm learning. I don't ever want to do that again. That made me look silly. So incorporating that into yourself helps you to grow.
I completely agree with that. Well, you know, you have written something talking about the importance of place and building the entrepreneurial ecosystem. We've already talked a little bit about that, but what do you mean about the importance of place?
Place matters without question. And if you think about it, let's go back to that lab concept. If you really want to have an entrepreneurial environment, there are lots of things that need to be present. You need to have the curiosity and inquisitiveness that's important there. You need to sort of be able to get over yourself. Don't focus so much on where you come from, but think about where you're going and how that is incorporated into you growing. You need to have a community of people that are, I don't want to necessarily say like-minded, but are willing to be supportive and actually be constructive in those environments. I think those are sort of some of the elements. This kind of clunky, funky spirit or exuberant funk, as a way I like to describe it, is your mind and your body and your soul, all these things come together to help you think about solving the problems. And people are willing to critique those problems honestly, your solutions honestly. You don't fall in love with that solution. It is, I have something I think is in honor to this problem. And someone says, yeah, but I wouldn't pay that for it. I just do this or I just do that. And you do it for the purpose of not squashing the solution, but making it stronger. Tempering it.
Yeah. And I know that there was an MIT professor, I think, that ran a lot of the innovation initiative. She had several things that are really necessary for the ecosystem to work. You know, great universities, we have that. WashU was a great university. We have the whole UMSL, you know, Mizzou. We have St. Louis U is a wonderful university. Webster, we have great universities. Industrial Ties, we've got good companies, because you need internships and things like that, you know, while these kids are going through school. Favorable government policies and regulations. And I know that we're working on that. We're getting better at that. And I know that you guys have done a lot of work around that at WashU. The risk capital is really important. And we have to have entrepreneurs. It doesn't work if you don't have entrepreneurs. And that's one of the things we're trying to do with MTC,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Is be that place for entrepreneurs.
Yep. You got to grow them and you have to attract them. The universities, the industry, and these are places that you can sort of start to till the soil and grow entrepreneurs organically. But you also have to have this magnetic appeal for people that are in other places that say, you know what, there's something special happening in Missouri, and I want to be there. I want to be close to it. I want to be a part of it. I want to add to that. I want my people on the team. I want to draw from those folks, and I want to bring my people into that environment. And that is what helps you to place matters. And we can't not put attention into the places that we have and what that means for our ability to have an innovation ecosystem.
For sure. Well, that's a perfect segue into MTC. So you and I sit on the Missouri Technology Corporation board, and it's always just so fun to spend time with you there. And I know that in 2021, you took over the chair role for the board as Jason Hall moved on to the CEO for the Greater St. Louis. But tell our listeners, if they're not really familiar, we've had some amazing success. We've got some unicorn stories that Missouri Technology Corporation was very heavily involved in.
It's interesting. When I came to St. Louis, I had spent some time in Washington. I'd been in Boston, and I said I wouldn't take any appointment except MTC, kind of smiling, not necessarily wanting it, but it was the only thing that intrigued me in any sort of public service environment. I didn't say that publicly, but sort of, you know, in my head. Lo and behold, a few years in, MTC came knocking and said, "Hey, would you be a part of this?" And I had a lot of respect for the organization and the people I meet. And it is an amazing entity, an organization that really provides early stage capital and support for new ventures. And the goal there is public capital, somewhat patient capital, invested in at the right time, sometimes very early on, to help de-risk technology so to get to the point that other capital might come on board. And that early capital can be the difference between something succeeding and not. Right, just something going or not, something coming here or not. And so making sure that we continue to be an attractive place. If I were to invite you to my home and say, "Hey, you know, it's really good, come whenever you want, but I don't tell you how to get there, or I don't give you windows in which you're going to be there," then I'm not really making it inviting. And so to this early stage capital, it says, not only do we want you to be here, we want to invest in you so that you can grow and help return that capital back to the state in some period of time. And we've had, you know, in the last decade, we've made some investments that have led to substantial returns on that investment to the state. And that's what we need to do. And really is about that return of capital being put back to work. So you have the cycle of continuing to grow the jobs in the state, the tax base in the state, the place that people want to come to see that you've got risk capital that's good and strong, great universities, you've got industry that cares about these things, you've got policies and procedures and a public sector that really cares about it, and that brings entrepreneurs. MTC, I think, is a critical linchpin in actually being able to make sure that entrepreneurs can grow and thrive in the state. I want the show me state to be able to show off the great wins that we've had in the last years and more to come.
No doubt about it. So tell our listeners just very quickly about the statewide strategic initiative.
The statewide strategic initiative is an effort that we are kicking off now. So one of the things you got to do from time to time is sort of stop and saying, what are you doing? What's your strategy for moving forward? And what should you be doing? And who should be at the table? We've changed in the last year. We've had a strong focus historically in agritech and agribusiness. Healthcare is always a big focus for us. But on the horizon, with the investments we're making in geospatial information and sensor work and that impact on agribusiness and healthcare tech, we've got to start to think about where is the future. We can't plan by looking in the rearview mirror. So this is saying, let's take that mirror and look forward. Let's bring the new voices to the table and let's figure out what does the next decade look like for the state, for innovation, so that when we're sitting here a decade from now, we're talking about the Benson Hill of this area, but we're talking about the alpha company or the beta company that's coming out of the strategic initiative. We launched that. We started to think about this about a year ago. We launched it in the planning stage this year with the idea that we will have something by February of 2022 that is a plan with input from across the state that helps us to think about where we should be focusing our time, our talents, and our treasures from the Missouri Technology Corporation. So I'm excited about it. I'm really looking forward. If you haven't, you go to the MTC website. There's going to be a landing page that gives you a window and insight into where this is and outputs that we have along the way. We're going to have some listening sessions across the state and the opportunity to really get. We've worked with Techonomy Partners as our partner to help facilitate this effort. But we're thrilled.
Oh, it's going to be wonderful. Well, you know, I told you this is something I've been percolating on. How important do you believe is being versus doing?
Yeah. I mean, we spend a lot of our lives being incented by doing, you know, just do, go, go, go. You know, I'll sleep when I'm dead kind of thing. And that's important. Our incentive structures often in the office are about doing. Our gig economy is very much about doing piecemeal work, transactional work. The idea of being for me is, it is, I think we're the summation of what we experience and come to know about ourselves, right? And so if you're always doing and you're never stopping and taking time to reflect, you never get to incorporate those lessons into yourself. And as a result of that, I think people who don't do that end up in these circles and they feel like they're in Groundhog's Day. They keep doing the same thing over and over. Now, the challenge to do too much doing is you don't get enough reflection and you don't grow. Too much being is you sit in rumination in the corner and you don't do anything. So we have to have a bias towards action. So we got to figure out, how do you do? How do you action oriented? But at the same time, you build the time in, if it's a slide out or a vacation or a sabbatical or a meditation point at the beginning or end of the day, where you can sort of incorporate what you've learned so that you can grow and move to the next level. I don't believe things happen in circles. I believe they happen in spirals. So we're not in the exact same level. We're in a similar position. And the question is, did we learn the lesson from the last one? And I always say, I hope that we're spiraling up instead of down. So I believe that being in and sort of doing are really, really important. It's a balancing act and figuring out how to integrate those and have a bias towards doing with a need to be, reflect, and incorporate is important.
I do too. I think we could do a whole podcast on that there. But I have to ask you, this is something extra. What do you believe, Dr. Carter, is the something extra that every leader needs?
I'm going to say two. I think that the reflection that we just talked about in that balance of being and doing so that you continue to grow and you're enriching yourself and those around you and so doing. And I think partnership. One of my first lectures to my students is how to live a wonderful life. And, you know, the punchline for this, so I'll tell you, and you won't have to take my first lecture, is find someone to share it with, right? Find someone that's a partner, a collaborator, someone that you can bounce ideas off of. And sometimes that's someone's, right? It's not saying you couple up with someone, but for me, that was finding a peer, a life partner, and my wife that we bounce ideas off of. She's a high-risk obstetrician, but I know lots about high-risk obstetrician just because of bouncing ideas off of her. I'm an electrical engineer, computer scientist, and systems guy, and she knows lots about that from hearing my ideas. And so that level of partnership and reflection I emulate in my workforce, work world, in my spiritual world, and in my family. And I think that is the secret sauce.
Beautiful. So good. Well, Dr. Carter, is there anything that you want to tell our listeners about? It can be whatever you would like to pitch. If you want them to come to WashU and come to school at WashU, you can talk about that.
I want you to go do something. Be oriented towards action. And I hope that for those of you who are entrepreneurially minded, you will look at the MTC website. You'll come be in an open session of one of our meetings and raise your voice for anything that's a concern. And if you have something that you want to share with the state about what you think we should be in terms of creating a strong innovation ecosystem, participate. This is really a great time for us to put our imprint on where the state will be a decade from now from the standpoint of innovation, technology, entrepreneurship. The time for funds coming in externally, the time for interest, the time post-pandemic, when we all have to sort of hunker down and figure out how do we solve the biggest problems that are of our time. And so I encourage you to be oriented towards action. And I hope some of that action will be invested in being a part of helping the Missouri Technology Corporation.
You know, Dr. Carter, it just reminds me, in 1904, St. Louis was the fourth largest city.
That's right.
In our nation, you know. And so some people think our glory days are behind us. But no, there is so much hope on the horizon. And what I would say, to couple with what you just said, be part of the story, you know.
Absolutely.
Our grandchildren looking back, you know, and saying, let's create that world for them and then, you know, be a part of that.
I said, my kids are native born St. Louisans and they're going to look back and say, my mom and dad did everything they could to make sure St. Louis was an impactful place in the country and the world. And that's what I'm doing.
Yeah, I love it. Well, thank you again for being on the show. This was so much fun.
Pleasure. I love it. Thanks, Lisa. You have a good one.
Thank you for listening to today's show. Something Extra with Lisa Nichols is a Technology Partners production. Copyright Technology Partners, Inc., 2019. For show notes or to reach Lisa, visit tpi.co/podcast. Don't forget to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you listen.